Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. The judgment of God may be long in coming, but it can come with a vengeance. For ancient Babylon, that time came when Daniel foretold the doom of Babylon's king. We in America should take heed, as his story might well be ours. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, we continue a series on the Church in Babylon, unleashing the power of a Spirit-filled witness. Turn to Daniel chapter 5 as we relive the awful night when a king saw the handwriting on the wall.
It's not possible to visit the sites of World War II without being impressed at the high cost of freedom. To be able to stand on Utah Beach and remember that it is here that a combined group of allies came together. And in the process, lives were lost as they went across in difficult circumstances with mines virtually everywhere. It's also interesting that we were able to stand not only on Utah Beach, but Omaha Beach. And we were reminded there of the tremendous sacrifice. About 70% of all of the young men who came there ended up being killed, because the Germans were able to just be on the cliffs and they were able to shoot and to kill everyone who was coming up. What a price, what sacrifice was paid for that. And then, of course, we think of the cliffs. We call the cliffs Point du Hoc. And those cliffs were scaled by our American troops. If I remember correctly, about 290 went up the cliffs, and about 90 were alive, and the others ended up being killed as they went up those cliffs. We also thought of John Steele. If you saw the movie The Longest Day, you know that he was featured because he was a paratrooper who landed on a church. And the church steeple caught him, and even today he is memorialized there as sort of an effigy hanging from a church steeple. Well, when the paratroopers came down, they came down in the wrong place, and they were just being shot by the Germans as they were landing. It was horrible. He landed there and pretended that he was dead, and then he was captured by the Germans. But then he left, was able to escape, and actually win many victories for the Allies. He died in 1966, a great hero. This, actually, the church is in St. Mary Anglice. And it is a church that represents the fact that this was the first town captured in Normandy by the Allies. But the price paid was horrific. But I think the most moving thing that we experienced was the cemetery, and it was there. The beautiful flowers of the American cemetery in France cannot obscure the tremendous price that was paid by our young men. As you walk through the cemetery, you look at the dates, and you discover that many of these young men were only 20 years old. Many went into battle fearful, crying, weeping, but they gave their life that we might be able to have freedom. And how wonderful it was for us to see also a cross dedicated to the unknown soldier. It reads, "Here rests in honored glory a comrade in arms known but to God." And most of us will die as unknowns. As many of you know, I was born in Canada but became an American citizen a number of years ago. And I have to say that as we were there in Normandy seeing the American flags and looking at nearly 10,000 graves, I was very proud to be an American and proud of the American flag. And you think of all of the families, all of the mothers and fathers, all of the relatives whose young people died, and the tears that were shed, but they were shed for freedom, and for that we are deeply grateful. But I think it's true to say that we live in a country that is very different now than the country was back in 1940 and 45 and on. And that's why today I speak with a very heavy heart, a message entitled The Handwriting on the Wall. The Handwriting on the Wall is actually the last in a series of 10 messages entitled The Church in Babylon, Unleashing the Power of a Spirit-Filled Witness. I speak this message because, first of all, we have to know what God is doing here in America and how God deals with nations. But at the end of the message, also, I'm going to be giving some challenges to live for Christ and for that which is right in our present generation. I pray that as I speak, I will speak with love, I'll speak with compassion, but I'll also speak truthfully, so that we will understand that even in our own nation, we have to interpret the handwriting on the wall. The passage of Scripture is Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5, you remember how we've been emphasizing the fact that Daniel was taken to Babylon as a teenager. When Daniel chapter 5 opens, he is now a man in his 80s. 60 years at least have passed since those original days when he purposed in his heart to serve God no matter what. And as a result of that, Daniel is now going to stand once again for God, even as an old man. Daniel was alive during the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was the king, you know, who went insane. He began to eat grass like animals and the whole bit until he came to the conclusion, and this is the last part of chapter 4, at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever, for his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from one generation to another. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he does according to his will in the army of heaven and amongst the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? It's no question but that I expect to see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven. But chapter 5 opens with his grandson, Belshazzar. There in between, there were kings who were assassinated. It's a very complicated history. Belshazzar is a co-ruler with a man by the name of Nabonidus, and Belshazzar calls a feast. We're in chapter 5. It's the happy hour. King Belshazzar made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in front of 1,000. Belshazzar, when he tasted the wine, commanded the vessels of gold and silver that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem to be brought, and they used these vessels to drink to their pagan gods. Set the scene. They are basically drunk. And by the way, sometime I should preach on alcohol. You know, because the Bible doesn't condemn wine, but approves it in certain contexts. People often use that, and it's often a pathway for young people to become alcoholics. I don't want to pick on Germany, but when we were there last week, our guide told us that Germans discovered that those who are between 20 and 32 were drinking less beer. Now, you might think that's good. Actually, a study showed that it is bad. The beer isn't strong enough. They are taking stronger things. We're a nation that is addicted. But Belshazzar does two things. First of all, not only is he and the concubines, I mean, this obviously is an orgy of sorts. They are all drunk, but also he blasphemes God. He takes the vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had brought from the temple of Jerusalem, and he uses them to drink wine to his gods. Clearly, he's shaking his fist in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, why is it that Belshazzar felt so confident that he could have this party when outside there were Medes and Persians gathered and had been there for a couple of months? He was confident because Babylon was impregnable. Nobody would be able to get into the city. Some people say that the walls were 300 feet high. I can't believe that. I think that's an exaggeration. We do know, however, they were 80 feet wide, so nobody was going to come over the walls. Soldiers were up there guarding. They had supplies for food for 10 years, supposedly, and water ran under the city because the Euphrates River ran through the city. They're absolutely confident that they would be there for as long as they wanted to be and could party. Well, that was the happy hour. Now there's a change, and it becomes very much the perplexing hour. The perplexing hour. Verse 5, immediately the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace opposite the lampstand. And the king saw the hand as it wrote. Then the king's color changed and his thoughts alarmed him. His limbs gave way and his knees knocked together. What a change. Have you ever wondered whether or not the Bible is really true? You know, you say you read these stories. Did they really happen? Did you know that archaeologists in ancient Babylon uncovered a room also that seems to have been plastered that was 60 feet wide and 170 feet long? I think that's enough to get 1,000 people in to have a party. And so they are there partying, and suddenly they see, without a body, a hand right on the wall. And the king becomes absolutely terrified. What a description of fear. And he calls in his astrologers and his charmers and says, what do this mean? And none of them knew what it meant. They couldn't interpret it. Well, the queen mother, not his wife, she was already in the party, no question about that. But the queen mother, probably his grandmother, hears about this and remembers Daniel, who has been living in obscurity for the last 40 or 50 years. But she remembers that he was able to interpret dreams and visions, and he'd be able to interpret the handwriting. Well, my friend, today you've been listening to part of a message entitled The Handwriting on the Wall. And of course, as you will find out next time when you listen to Running to Win, that Daniel did interpret the words on the wall. And you know, even though we may not believe in dreams today and so forth, we as believers do have the ability to be able to interpret events and to do so with divine wisdom. And the God who brought Daniel in at that moment in history, God knows. We need people today with the wisdom to discern what is going on beneath the surface so that we here in America might understand the true issues. So tune in next time as we continue with Running to Win and the message, The Handwriting on the Wall. In America today, the handwriting is on the wall.
Erwin Lutzer, introducing The Handwriting on the Wall, the last in a series on the Church in Babylon, unleashing the power of a Spirit-filled witness. Next time on Running to Win, more drama as Daniel interprets a king's deadly dream. The Church in Babylon is a 10-part series on CD. We'd like to send you that series as our thank you for a gift of any amount to support the ministry of Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.